Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
And good afternoon. This is the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. I'm sitting in for Mike Crute. My name is Jim Santel. Delighted to be with you this afternoon, this hour, and next hour as well. Taking your calls, taking your comments, taking your perspectives on major issues of the day. Delighted once again to be with you. I am joined in the Madison studio this afternoon by my good friend and colleague, Evan. My producer is going to be working with you and working with me to get your calls, your perspectives into our show today. Please, please call us in, call into us. We'll take your perspectives and views at 844-967-2789. This is the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. I'm sitting in today for Mike Crute, who is off doing the business of this wonderful radio station on behalf of Civic Media. Glad to be with you and glad to launch into this two-hour program of important discussions of major topics today. Let me tell you about the plan for the next couple of hours, again, inviting your comments and questions along the way. The first hour, we're going to be spending time focusing on two of the three principal stories grabbing the headlines right now in America and throughout the world. We know that one of those stories that we're not going to spend much time on at all, just because the coverage is complete and it is accessible to you in other avenues, and that is that as we speak right now overseas, the country of Great Britain is memorializing its recently deceased Queen, Queen Elizabeth II, and coming out of London today. If you were there and standing in line waiting to see her as she lies in state, you would be in a line 5 miles long in London. 22 hours waiting to see the Queen, anticipating the great memorial for her coming up this coming Monday. Full coverage of that, of course, not only on this radio station, but other places around the globe, including right here in Wisconsin and throughout the United States of America. So we recognize and we acknowledge this afternoon that our colleagues, our friends in Great Britain, observing the great term of Elizabeth II and anticipating the future there in their nation as we do here in ours. Our two big issues this afternoon, throughout this hour, and probably into the next hour as well, the two big issues attracting the attention of America on the headlines across our nation. One, once again, Mar-a-Lago. Once again, the federal district court judge in southern Florida issued yesterday another major, major decision in this case that affects its future, affects the capacity of the United States Department of Justice to continue to investigate this very important issue. We're going to delve into that in greater detail, talk with you about what exactly it was that Judge Eileen Conner of the Southern District of Florida wrote yesterday in a 10-page opinion, how that implicates all sorts of issues related to not just executive privileges she seems to focus on, but also attorney-client privilege, most importantly, the safety, the security of our nation, and the significance of this investigation when it comes to ensuring that we are safe and secure, the acquisition, the identification, the seizure there out of the former president's residence and his resort of quite literally thousands of documents, many of them marked classified, presumably conveying information about top-level secrets in our nation and around the world. We're going to talk more about that particular investigation, its status in the wake of Judge Eileen Conner's decision of just yesterday, and the response likely coming from the United States Department of Justice. Could be as late as and as recent as this afternoon, more likely in the coming days or so, as the Department of Justice almost certainly appeals Judge Eileen Conner's latest decision to the United States Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit. We'll talk more about that, what that means, and the implications of that as well. The other major issue that's also going to be on our docket, our syllabus this afternoon, is this transportation of two plane loads of migrants, mostly from Venezuela, coming through our nation from the state of Texas, transported to Martha's Vineyard in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts by the governor of Florida, through the support and encouragement, and yes, the financial support, not only of the state of Florida, but also the governor of Texas, bringing about 50 migrants to the Commonwealth of Massachusetts in Martha's Vineyard. We'll talk about the circumstances that got them there, the predicates for that, the financial backing, the reason, the explanations given by the governor, Ron Santis, of Florida for that. And then talk about the legality of it, some thoughts about whether or not one can do this in America, whether there is a predicate for doing this legally under state law, under federal law, some of the discussion going on out there right now about the, again, the implications of doing this kind of thing described by many people as the involuntary transport of human beings, colleagues in the human race across America, dumped in Martha's Vineyard by the governor of Florida. The good news here, of course, as you also know, is that while that happened just in the past several days, probably without the full understanding and the full concurrence, if the concurrence at all of those 50 Venezuelans here, a part of our immigration system, the good news is that they were receiving in Martha's Vineyard a welcome that is perhaps at the highest level of what Americans do, welcoming these folks unannounced into their community and being provided with support and with health and with food and comfort. And the latest is that just within the past hours or so, all of them transported safely and securely to Joint Base Cape Cod, there again in Massachusetts, by the authorities there to once again ensure that they are safe after this very peculiar, if not downright illegal, behavior of two of our governors in the United States of America. We're going to chat about the transport of migrants from Texas to Massachusetts as a part of our discussion today. And Evan, what is that sound? Bring that sound up, sure. So we can bring that up as well.
Yeah, for a little bit of context here, this is some attorneys that, you know, went to Martha's Vineyard after this just terrible cruelty. And sort of gives us a little bit of context. It's about 50 seconds long. So, yeah, do you want to play that quick?
Let's hear from some of the attorneys who are there on the ground, I assume, talking to some of these migrant workers. Let's hear that, Evan.
That's
thanks
right.
So much.
Here we go.
Arrived last night, make it clear that they were lied to again and again and fraudulently induced to board the planes. They were told there was a surprise present for them, and that there would be jobs and housing awaiting for them when they arrived. This was obviously a sadistic lie. Not only did those responsible for this stunt know that there was no housing and no employment awaiting the migrants, they also very intentionally chose not to call ahead to any single office authority on Martha's Vineyard so that even the most basic human needs arrangements could be made, ensuring that no help awaited the migrants at all was the entire point.
And there you have it.
A stunning report. Stunning report from one of the many attorneys right now on the ground talking to these 50 migrants, part of our nation, part of our community, and used, I think, as most people are now saying, in a political stunt to underscore, yes, indeed, the fact that in America, we have not addressed immigration for well over a quarter century. We desperately need immigration reform. We need to have a legislation that addresses these kinds of things. No doubt our system needs help. It is in many ways broken, needs to be addressed in a way that's coherent and thoughtful. But this is not it. And this is the kind of behavior, once again, meant as a political stunt, using human beings. Just stunning. Let's go back. Let's take that issue up first, Evan. Let's talk about that a little bit more and provide our listeners with some background information about it. A great lead-in already on that particular story. About 50 migrants unexpectedly arriving by plane on Martha's Vineyard, just off the coast of mainland Massachusetts on Wednesday evening, escalating this tactic that we've seen before on some states that have shipped busloads of migrants to liberal bastions like Washington and New York, other times in our recent nation's history. And the reason stated, we'll get more to that in just a moment or so, but it's to protest the significant rise in illegal immigration in our nation, which has been happening under presidents, but nonetheless to underscore their own upsettedness, if you will, with President Biden, presumably President Obama before that, and not understanding that this needs to be a bipartisan, apolitical approach, doing this, again, using human beings for that purpose. The migrant group, what do we know about them? They included children. They arrived on two planes about 3 p.m. without any warning, as that attorney said. They arrived in the Cape Cod area, Martha's Vineyard, Nantucket, that area, those of you who know that well. Officials and volunteers from the island's six towns moved heaven and earth, according to one report, to essentially take up the response that they would normally do in the event of a hurricane in that case.
Wow.
What did they do? Those folks there, again, indicating that again, you cannot underestimate the capacity of human beings to do the right thing, even under these inappropriate political situations. What did they receive? The migrants got COVID-19 tests. They got food. They got clothing. Confusion on the ground about who sent them there. How did they arrive there? No notice, as that attorney just indicated in the soundbite that you gave to us. And likewise, a real sense of lack of clarity about what they were doing there in the first place. What did the communications director for Governor DeSantis in Florida say? What did they say to justify that? I want to talk more about what was actually going on there. She said, this is a woman named Taryn Fenske, she said that the two flights were part of a state program to transport undocumented immigrants to so-called sanctuary destinations. Well, we know that regardless of how you regard the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, they were not aware of the fact that they were coming in. The Florida legislature, again, curiously, Florida legislature set aside $12 million for this transportation program. And here's what this communication director says in particular. She says states like Massachusetts, New York, and California will better facilitate the care of these individuals who they have invited into our country by incentivizing illegal immigration through their destination as sanctuary states and support the Biden administration's open border policies. That's the justification given for this conduct that we're going to talk more about right after the break. Join us here. Bring in your comments, your questions. I'll give you more information about the factual predicates for this. Talk about its legality and talk about the consequences of it for the rule of law in America right after the break this afternoon on Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Shame. Shame.
The Devil's Advocates. Never personal, only politics.
And we're back. This is Jim Santel, Devil's Advocates radio program this afternoon, taking your callers along with my producer, my colleague in Madison at 844-967-2789 right before the break. And for much of the rest of this hour and into next, we're going to be talking about two major issues. First up is this issue related to the transportation of migrants, 50 people, plane loads of individuals from Texas to Martha's Vineyard, now safe again at the Joint Base Cape Cod in Massachusetts. Right before the break, we were talking about the facts behind this particular story. Before we get to some commentary about it, we know the reasons for this from the governor of the state of Florida, basically a political stunt to try to compel, if you will, perhaps the government to do something about immigration. That motive, not a bad one, but this notion of using human beings, most of them from Venezuela, to do this, truly, truly reprehensible, and the kind of thing that is getting an awful lot of legal attention as well. Most of them from Venezuela. Many of them, one particular individual talked about leaving his country 3 months ago, traveling through Colombia and Panama, making his way through Central America, eventually coming to the U.S. border and coming into this country, being a part of our immigration system. Quite stunning, resulting in their movement by these planes into Massachusetts. What do we know about how they got there? Well, Evan played right before the break this snippet of information from one of the attorneys talking with them, providing them with some legal counsel and also some direction about where they go next. Many of them had indicated that when they were in San Antonio, they were approached by a woman named Perla, P-E-R-L-A, who offered them transportation to Boston. It's unclear whether Perla was affiliated with either Texas or Florida governments, but they were put on brief layovers in Florida and North Carolina. They landed in Martha's Vineyard. A lot of suggestion here that they were going to Boston. The suggestion was that they would have legal resources there in the state's capital in Massachusetts. Lots of law schools, as you well know, in Boston. And a lot of people suggesting that they were misled into believing that they were coming to a place where they would get legal representation, jobs awaiting them, and plainly misrepresenting on the ground in Texas, these other places where they had brief layovers, that they were going to some place that would provide them with safety and security. Also, some reporting just this afternoon from those same attorneys there in town that many of them properly on release, not in the custody of the U.S. Immigration Service, but subject to the jurisdiction of our U.S. immigration system, have hearings coming up in Texas. And they planned to appear for those. And they were told that if they did, in fact, go to Massachusetts, if they got on these planes, that would be taken care of, that these kinds of things they should not be concerned about. Again, wild misrepresentations about the reasons for their going there and the facts that they would land there with safety and security. We know from a lot of reporting coming out of Martha's Vineyard that the support was not there initially, but that the community did, in fact, respond in ways that are quite literally stunning. We know that the island's sole homeless shelter doesn't operate during the summer. It had room for about 10 people with one bathroom. 50 people with no homes is an overwhelming number for the size of this community, the director of that homeless shelter said. But this is a strong and capable community, and as I've indicated, as all the reporting indicates, that they are safe and secure. Even so, coming out of Massachusetts, one of the state senators looking at this, as our other federal and state authorities, said this. He criticized strongly this move behind the flights. He said, "This is a cruel ruse that manipulates families that are seeking a better life. Our community, meeting Martha's Vineyard and others in the area, has been targeted clearly, not by virtue of the people who go there, but by virtue of the actions of the governor of the state of Florida and presumably also of Texas in making this happen in the first place." A lot of focus on how this happened. A good news, again, that they are safe and secure, but plenty transported there under misrepresentations about how they're getting there. An awful lot of information yet to be known as we're discovering what happened. What happened? How did they get there? And how did they land in that particular circumstance today?
They were trafficked for cause.
An awful lot of people talking about this and comparing it to human traffickers. And my time, Evan, as United States attorney, and plainly any prosecutor, federal, state prosecutor out there, knows that this is precisely the kind of thing that human traffickers would do. I'm not indicating that this partakes of a prosecutable case under the human trafficking statutes, but look at the kind of conduct that you've just identified that all these people are talking about. Talking to individuals, approaching them and saying that they are subject, perhaps, to further immigration actions, indicating that those can be resolved, indicating that those will be taken care of, that they've got a safe haven in other places, putting them on planes far distant from where they originated, and putting them in a place then where they do not have access to the basic trappings of life and livelihood, partakes a lot of that. An awful lot of people saying that even though there may not be a prosecutable case under the strict law of the human trafficking statutes, it partakes of that kind of conduct, which leads us, Evan, into a discussion about the kinds of things that people are looking to today and focusing on particular federal statutes and other theories by which the governor of the state of Florida may, in fact, have run afoul of the law, both federally and in the state system, and under common law as well. Let's talk about some of those, and again, taking phone calls here at the Devil's Advocates as we talk more about that. We know, for example, that there are some statutes that may or may not be applicable. There's a statute called 1324 of Title 8 of the United States Code. Basically, it's the alien smuggling statute. Lots of people talking about that this afternoon. The domestic transportation of
of unauthorized aliens. It sounds it might, in fact, be appropriate. Basically, he says that they can't transport or attempt to transport undocumented immigrants, as the statute said, knowing or in reckless disregard of the fact that they are aliens and they've come to this place, the United States of America, in violation of the law. And without going into great detail, that phrase, in violation of the law, probably makes that particular prosecution, this particular statute, inapplicable because, in fact, these folks, these 50 Venezuelans who have come to this country, are in the immigration system, and they probably are not in violation of the law. But right after the break, we're going to talk about some other options that are out there as people look at the legality of what happened here. We'll talk about some of the civil remedies that could be available, other things that are causing an awful lot of concern about what these governors in the southern states did, thankfully resulting in, because of the good behavior of Massachusetts residents, in good safety and security. But nonetheless, more discussion about that right after our break here on Devil's Advocates Radio program.
Locally raised, 100% organic. The Devil's Advocates.
This is the Devil's Advocates radio show. My name is Jim Santel. I am standing in for Mike Ruth this afternoon, who is off doing the business of this radio station. I am delighted to be joined by my producer and my friend and colleague, Evan, who is in Madison. We're both taking your phone calls at 844-967-2789 as we're chatting, talking, providing some information and some perspective this afternoon about two of the major stories that are hitting the headlines today in America. One of those related to the decision issued just yesterday by Judge Eileen Cannon out of the Southern District of Florida. We're going to get to that in the latter part of this hour and into next hour as well, having to do with Mar-a-Lago and the acquisition, the seizure of many of these thousands of documents coming out of the Mar-a-Lago estate and the subject of a search warrant and now an investigation of the former president and perhaps others to determine whether or not they illegally, improperly removed, possessed. What did they do with those documents? We're going to chat more about that and the decision, the recent decision just yesterday by the district court judge that's going to affect the future of the investigation, at least for the foreseeable future. But right now, we're talking about the other major story of the day that is still breaking. We're still getting information about how this happened, under what circumstances, exactly what is the legal authority for the transport across country from Texas to Martha's Vineyard, to the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, of 50 members of the human race who are there now, safe and secure, because of the good things that the people of Massachusetts have done to support them, even though they showed up unannounced. No one from Texas, no one from Governor DeSantis, state of Florida, told Massachusetts they were coming, simply transported them and said, basically, this is where you're going, and probably, almost certainly, misrepresented to those 50 people the reasons for their going, promising them jobs, promising them legal advice, promising them that their immigration matters would be taken care of when, in fact, none of that was true, which gets us to our next discussion, Evan, about whether this is legal or not. We chatted before the break about one federal statute that probably isn't specifically applicable, but there are other theories out there being discussed that might also make this highly problematic for the governor, certainly of Florida, and perhaps for the governor of the state of Texas.
I was just about to ask.
And
is
other
this
people.
Is this in any way different than what happened in, you know, Texas sending migrants to D.C.?
Absolutely. Same kind of thing. Again, we can talk and should talk. This is where the conversation in America should be, even if, and I don't believe it is, right and legal to do it, even if there is a legality behind this, which is not there, I don't believe. The question should always be, is it right to do it? In government, always we ask that question. Just because you can do it doesn't mean you should do it. And yes, indeed, I'll use the word morality, decency, common decency. Is this the kind of thing that we do to any human beings for a political stunt, to underscore immigration challenges and issues in this nation? And I would argue no. And beyond that, the footnote footnote to that, that central argument that you're making, Evan, about the rightness and decency that we should expect from our governors, including Governor DeSantis. There are also some significant legal issues that are being bandied about right now. Let's talk about some of them. I mentioned before that the state of Florida, as a part of this program, allocated about $12 million for this transportation program here, and as Evan, you said, in the other cases as well. An awful lot of looking at that particular statute that authorized the state of Florida to, and this is the quote from the legislature itself, to transport unauthorized aliens from this state, for instance, which may not be been the case here, since the migrant's journey originated in Texas. Yeah. Again, a transportation authorization from this state, meaning Florida. So the question is whether or not there was a proper allocation of those monies out of state from Texas to Massachusetts. There could be a violation of the very authorization that permitted this up front. An awful lot of people looking at that right now in Florida, wondering out loud. Let's talk more generally about the other problems with this, and that is this misrepresentation. During the course of our first half hour, Evan rightfully played and appropriately and informed us all about this report coming out of Martha's Vineyard that these folks were, to use the commonplace word, duped. They were misrepresented. They were misled into believing that they were coming to a place of safety and security and told they've got jobs, they've got legal representation, they've got other trappings of government that would support and defend them and keep them safe and secure. Significantly, during the Trump administration, there were an awful lot of proposals by this same kind of thing during the Trump administration. We know that some of the ICE officials had proposed this. There was a White House advisor whose name you know well, named Stephen Miller. He is now the subject, as you know, of a grand jury subpoena investigating January 6th and other matters related to the Trump administration. Stephen Miller at the time had proposed something like this as well, and it was rejected at the time because of the concerns about its legality, even by the Trump administration. What is the focus? What is the reason for being very concerned about the legitimacy legally, even putting aside the most significant moral and decency considerations here? It's a basic notion that when people who are not in custody are transported, that they have to do so under a voluntary and consent-based way. You can't simply take people and put them in a bus, in a train. It's about consent, right? Different, entirely different if these folks were in the custody, for example, of the Immigration and Naturalization Service, of ICE. They were not. They had properly come here. They're subject, yes, to immigration review, but no one has them in formal federal or state custody. And under these circumstances, this fact that they were basically put in these situations where they were transported without their consent, without full information, you can argue that they were put there under duress, believing that they were going to get to a place where they did in fact have support. An awful lot of people saying that is simply, it's not the case that a state can physically move immigrants like federal immigration authorities can. And this gets back to a larger issue, Evan, that you and I and others on this radio station discussed, which is the exclusive, under the Constitution of the United States of America, the exclusive allocation of authority where? To the United States government. That's the federal government. That's the Congress. That's the executive branch. And yes, in appropriate circumstances, that's the judicial branch as well. A federal system, our founding fathers said that immigration is one of those specific areas about which the federal government has exclusive jurisdiction. That's it. States don't have it. Why? Because you don't want, as some states have attempted, and we've seen it here again today. Arizona did this, attempted it a number of years ago. You don't want individual states entering into this field and making their own independent laws, right? Especially when it comes to the Southwest border, Arizona, New Mexico, Texas. You want to have uniformity. That's what you get when you've got a federal system. States should not be involved in this. I would offer this perspective that a governor applying even a state-authorized funding to do this cannot be moving immigration individuals around the country. That's a federal authority. That's something that he does not have the capacity to do. Beyond that, many folks, this is a quote again from many people coming out of Boston, if they were told they were going to Boston, they may have actually wanted to go to Boston, one of the folks who talked with her about this. Again, we talked already about
about the legal resources there in the state's capital, law schools. And while this particular person says, following up on your comments, Evan, earlier, would not say this would constitute trafficking in the literal legal sense of the word, but that kind of conduct is very similar to what you would see human traffickers do. That's an exact quote from people who are talking to people who are on the ground right now. They move people around, this individual said, without their consent. They hang their immigration status over them. Again, that threat that something bad may happen to them. They take them out of areas that they're familiar with or where they have connection and the ability to connect and get services. Taking people out of those places where they've got the support and they've got the functionality to engage with others, to do their lives and livelihoods as they want. That cannot possibly be what America is all about. Let's talk about some other theories along the way that are also out there. Let's suppose that they were, in fact, deceived. An awful lot of support for that notion. Were, in fact, deceived into boarding those flights and found to have standing, if you will, to bring a lawsuit against, say, for example, the governor of the state of Florida, maybe Texas as well. If they were coerced in consenting in a language perhaps they did not understand, even if they did understand the language, being told that they would be given promises, deliberately being misled about what would happen.
By the government.
And Texas officials, Florida officials, people in responsible positions of authority, regardless of language, an awful lot of people in America would trust and would place their faith and confidence in government authorities saying, just trust us. If they were duped into believing things, that can be fraud. Texas officials responsible for fraud, misrepresenting what's going to happen to them. And again, as Evan, you just noted, doing it on the basis of using their official capacity to do this, describing, making promises to them about things that they will find on the far end that plainly were not there. A fraud possibility here, a fraud lawsuit. And let's talk more about how that could play out. We all know about torts. We've talked a lot about that in the civics education that often is the devil's advocates with Mike and Dom and others, including you, Evan, and others. We often talk about torts. What are torts? So they're wrongs. They're basic violence against, they're not criminal cases, but wrongs against individuals. Could be a car accident, could be medical malpractice, all kinds of things. It is entirely possible that you could identify here a tort, again, based upon the misrepresentations made by government authorities. A deception by the transport organizers would mean that the migrants likely perhaps have a viable cause of action to sue the governments of Florida, perhaps Texas as well, maybe the governors, again, in their official capacities, and those who help them do this, what, for intentional infliction of emotional distress. That's a tort. That's a tort in most American law. And pain and suffering along with that, the kinds of things that lawyers bring into courts all the time, the kinds of things that our courts, our federal, our state courts, sometimes even our local courts, acknowledge are legitimate bases upon which to seek redress, typically from private parties who may have injured individuals, but in this case, a possible tort action, alleging wrongs, alleging intentional infliction, emotional distress, pain and suffering for the tort of misrepresentation, for the tort of lying, deceiving, and getting them into this circumstance without providing them with a full understanding of what's going to be going on. An awful lot of people are also talking about resource allocations. Think about this as well. By doing this, they prevented these migrants who, again, have hearings coming up, as some of them as soon as Monday, from obtaining the resources that the United States government would give them in Texas, in other places where they came from, Venezuela, the resources available to them through the U.S. immigration services that are available to them, denying them those access, frustrating, if you will, another word, frustrating them that the government's enforcement ability to oversee this thing that's exclusively within the ambit of federal authorities, impeding, if you will, the government's ability to keep tabs on those cases that are, in fact, pending involving these very people, the migrants brought, according to every report, against their understanding, duping them, bringing them into Massachusetts, taking them away, if you will, from immigration supervision, which presumably they have and continue to be a part of. Great questions as the lawyers are talking with them today, even as they are now safe and secure in the encampment there. Even as that goes forward, what happens this coming week,
the days and weeks ahead? If they weren't safe?
What happens if they were separated from that
accountability of the government? What if that plane crashed?
What if they land there and these wonderful people in Massachusetts, not by any bad intent, simply aren't there to take care of them? We have children, Evan, in this group. The tort of failure, again, to support them, all these kinds of things that could have happened that are going to be looked at. And the governor, the people of the state of Florida, I'd offer the people of the state of Texas as well, should be taking a look at this and scratching their heads and say, gosh, are my elected officials acting properly, not just morally, but also legally in dealing with our immigration issue? An awful lot of that. We'll talk more about that as we come back in the final moments of our first hour here on Devil's Advocates, chatting about this transportation of migrants to Martha's Vineyard and beyond here on the Devil's Advocates.
You're seeing and what you're reading.
The Devil's Advocates, because freedom.
And we're back in these final moments of our first hour. We're talking this hour about this breaking news coming out of Texas and Florida and Massachusetts, having to do with the transport, probably the deceptive transport, about 50 Venezuelans subject to our immigration rules and laws here in the United States of America, duped into believing they were going to a place where they would get legal resources and familial resources, other things. And now, because of the good people in Martha's Vineyard, other places there, they are safe and secure. But nonetheless, what is being described across the board as a political stunt by virtually everybody, the folks there finding themselves away from the place in Texas. Right before the break, we were chatting about some of the consequences of this, not just for the people there, but also for the governor of the state of Florida, Ron DeSantis, who did this, and others who may have supported him. Some various theories that could be brought forward to address their grievances legally, understanding once again that probably the principal focus is the humanity of this, right? The notion that these are human beings and we should not be, as Americans, treating people like this, using them to underscore a good point, nonetheless, that we need to have immigration reform, but not doing this in this way. Right before the break, I was chatting a little bit about some of the various remedies and noting this fundamental notion that moving a case, for example, from one immigration jurisdiction to another does not accomplish a denomination of that new state, if you will, as the place where the immigration proceedings could proceed. That's not how it's done. And again, this notion that it's the federal government and not the state government that is responsible for doing all of this. An awful lot of lawyers, again, descending upon this, investigating exactly what happened. You've got Gavin Newsom from California, way across the country, who is calling upon the United States Department of Justice, which does have jurisdiction in these kinds of areas, to investigate, as he described, a possible criminal or civil violation of federal law based upon this allegedly fraudulent scheme. And so lots of people looking at that these days and saying, gosh, we need to look more closely at this. We've also got some good news, as I said, coming out of this. An awful lot of people who are assisting in the effort to aid these migrants, and including securing aid. We've got at least one individual said, I've got lawyers coming from Boston, some on the island who are well-versed in the situation with respect to legal ramifications of being an undocumented refugee in the United States, so to ensure that their rights are preserved as best as possible. Again, lots of people up there, I'm proud to say, the legal profession also responding to this. We also hearken back, as we think about this, to history. We think about what are called the reverse freedom marches way back in the 1960s. Those efforts by, again, what we'd regard today and regarded at that time as racist legislators, racist public officials who decided, again, based upon ruses, promised people of color from our southern states that if they would get on buses, there are jobs and there are opportunities waiting for them in northern states, when in fact those were lies, and brought them north into places where they were unfamiliar, taking away from their homes or families, again, to underscore a political point, that is, they objected to the civil rights movement and engaged in these kinds of reverse freedom rides. This partakes of an awful lot of that. We know as well that there are people in the state of Massachusetts, some very good officials, who are responding to this very, very appropriately, not only providing support and assistance, but also commenting about this, criticizing the governor of Florida. One of them, Massachusetts Representative Bill Keating, who says that human beings are not cargo. Human beings are not cargo, Governor, and this kind of thing should not be happening. Another one, some of the clergy there saying, I'm very proud of this community, proud of what we have done, and looking forward to providing them with food, shelter, medical care, the kinds of things from this unexpected relocation. We do have some callers on the line. Glad to see that. And let's take, I know you've all been waiting for a long period of time. Joe, let's start with you from Madison. Appreciate the call in today. What's your comment or perspective about this event happening on the East Coast and happening throughout the United States of America?
First of all, thank you so much for tackling this. Number one, I cannot emphasize enough how important it was that you indicated that this idea of immigration was very important with the founding fathers, who, if you think of that, it was a new country. Of course they would be interested in immigration, and that they were very strong on the idea that the federal government oversees this, not at the individual states, so that there was a uniformity in terms of how immigration went forward. So I, you know, it was a perspective that I had not thought of, that immigration has been happening in our country from the very get-go, and the founding fathers were really adamant that the federal government looked at this, not a state, not a governor. And I would also ask if you have any speculation about who would end up paying if there was a civil judgment, let's say, against the governor of Florida or the governor of Texas. Wouldn't it be the residents of the taxpayers, basically, of those two states that would end up paying for his defense, not unlike what's happened with Gableman and the lawsuits brought against him? I'll take my answer off the air, Jim. Thanks again, as always.
Joe, thanks for the comments, both about the constitutional premises for immigration work, but as to the second issue, a very good point. So let's assume that there's a tort action that goes forward. Again, not anticipating that, but could be, thinking through all these kinds of issues. And you sue a governor, which you can do in his or her official capacity. Those kinds of lawsuits happening all the time for official actions undertaken. And to Joe's good point, who ends up paying for that ultimately? Well, there's not a tree that grows money that says, okay, we're just going to give those monies away to people who happen to file lawsuits. Those are tax dollars, and they're supported by the settlements, if you will, the judgments that are sometimes entered by courts and by juries. Those are supported by tax dollars in the state of Florida, in the state of Texas. And so, yes, quite literally, it would be the state taxpayers who would support those kinds of lawsuits if they come forward. We will see. We will see what happens. Also, of course, the Department of Justice has both some criminal focus on this and perhaps also some civil focus as well. Joe, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate that very much. As we go to the last couple of minutes, Mark is also on the phone. Mark, you've been waiting a long time. Let me take your call as well, your comment or perspective on this very important issue today.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. And it's important to point out the irony here that Judge Cannon down there in Florida is actually an immigrant from Colombia. So, I mean, that just kind of struck me as I was listening here. The other thing I'd like to point out is there is no official Biden policy of open borders. The only people that are saying open borders, are the Republicans and their supporters, you know, in the right-wing media sphere. I mean, because some of these people are advertising at points south of the border, say, come to America, get here however you can, and we'll find work for you. And that they've failed, our government has failed, you know, under the Trump administration, when they had full power, they could have reorganize our immigration system to say, here's where you come through. We'll process you through this system here because we need the labor in this country, and make it possible for these people to come to this country safely and legally. And what we didn't hear earlier on is all these people that they shipped up to Martha's Vineyard there were here in this country legally. They'd come through the legal process.
And Mark, your point, very, very well taken. All those good points as we come into the end of this hour about our immigration system. It desperately needs change, desperately needs legislative action. This is not the way to do it. This is not the advocacy that's going to attract support. We're going to chat more about this issue, but more importantly, in our second hour here on Devil's Advocates, get back into what Mark just identified, which is this issue coming out of South Florida once again. The Judge Cannon there issuing this decision just yesterday moved to that area. We'll talk about more of that in the second hour of Devil's Advocates right here this afternoon.